Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
Winner, winner, chicken dinner.
You got to know.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
Welcome to another edition of The Final Table from Table 2 at Harrah's World Series of Poker Poker Room here in St. Louis, which will be hosting a World Series of Poker circuit event in just about 10 weeks. In the month of April, the first 2 weeks of April will be full of circuit tournament players. I'm Paul Harrah's, just back from playing at a circuit event in Tunica, Mississippi, with lots of stories to tell about that. And Dennis, you've been home in St. Louis. It's very odd that I was the one on the road.
Yeah, I was about to say, what's going on here? You know, you're here and you're gone and I'm here.
Yeah.
Hey, but there's been some things going on. Remember last week you were talking about the bad beat of Harrah's and the 200 plus thousand that the gentleman won?
Yes.
Well, the backup on that thing was, I think, 267,000.
Yeah.
And it got hit again.
Really?
It got hit again. They handed out another paycheck of, what, 134,000 basically to a guy?
Nice, nice. What was the hand? Do you know?
Yeah, it wasn't. Can you imagine this? You're sitting there, pre-flop, you've got a 5-6 of hearts.
Okay.
The flop comes 7-8-9 of hearts.
Get out of here.
You can hardly contain yourself.
He flopped the straight flush.
You've got, I mean, he's sitting there probably from the waist up trying to appear calm and cool and collect. And his feet are dancing a jig underneath the table, you know, just going around.
Before you go on with the story, have you ever flopped a straight flush?
Yes.
You have?
King high straight flush in spades.
I never, never have flopped a straight flush. I've made a straight flush, but I've never flopped one.
Well, I limped in with one of those quality hands, a king nine of spades.
You know, that came queen jack ten.
It did, absolutely. And you know what the bad part of mine was?
Yeah.
Sitting there, and all there was two other people, and we'd all three just limped in. So the pot had, I think it was a 10, 20, so it was $60 in the pot, right?
Yeah.
Alrighty. I checked, going, please, somebody do something.
Yeah.
Check.
Uh-huh.
Turn comes a blank. I'm going, nah, what do I do? What? How do you play this? How do I do? I checked again.
Yeah.
Check.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the dealer saying, hand them the cards, let them pick anything they want. I don't care. Give them each two cards. All right? That'll work.
Run it twice.
Right. No problem.
Yeah.
I make like a $40 bet.
Mm-hmm.
Fold.
Of course. Yeah. It's like flopping quad aces. You can't get paid off.
Well, no, of course not.
But in this case.
Yeah, this one was pretty awesome. Because, again, he flopped a straight flush with his 5-6. Well, you know, he's sitting there and playing it, and the other guy's playing aggressively at him. They both get it all in. He's just tickled to death, of course.
Yeah.
And it turns out he was drawing dead. The other guy had the jack ten of hearts. They both flopped a straight flush. I have never in my entire life seen that happen before.
Yeah. Most bad beat jackpots are hands where somebody hits it on the turn or the river.
Oh, obviously.
Like one last week where it was quads over quads.
Right.
Can't do that on the flop, obviously. That was a fives over deuces.
Right.
And the five came on the river. But in this case, to both flop it.
Yeah. Can you imagine that? Flopping a straight flush, drawing dead, and happy as can be.
Yeah, because he got paid off.
Absolutely. So, I don't know. It was a general. Tim, I guess, was the one that had the bad beat, and
no,
Q.
Is that right?
And Q, or was it Q that had the bad beat and took the majority of the pot, and then Tim, I guess, was the one. Then they
had the
best hand. But anyhow, they're both happy.
I'm sure
there's no doubt about it.
Yeah, because while one guy got 130,000, the other guy got 65 or 68,000
Nice condolences.
Quarter of that pot.
Yeah.
And the people at the rest of the table
have
a great story and a pretty good check of their own.
Not too bad at all. So.
Sharing that. Yeah. What is that? That's going to be more than $8,000 for them.
Exactly.
Wow. So the jackpot here now, after getting hit twice in 2 weeks at Harrah's St. Louis, is at $82,613, and it starts building again.
Oh, it'll be over six figures very quickly here.
Absolutely.
A lot of activity in the room, the whole bit. It'll be right back up there.
Well, it only took from October when it was hit to January to go up over 400,000.
Right.
You know, they get a lot of play in here.
They do.
Here we are, 2 o'clock on a Tuesday afternoon. There are 10 tables in play here, and there's no, it's not like there's a big tournament in town.
No. Can you imagine this place in April?
It's going to be packed.
It's going to be unbelievable. I am so looking forward to this.
Yeah. All right. Joining us as well today on the show is Joe the McGowan.
McGowan. Okay, yeah. There you go.
The poker coach, Joe McGowan, who is always the third member of our team. Hi, Joe. How are you?
I'm doing well, Paul.
Ever flop a straight flush?
I don't think I have. I'm probably with you. I have never flopped it. I've definitely made a couple here and there. Yeah, never flopped it. I just amazed how big that jackpot is and how big the backup jackpot was. That's awesome. That's a lot of fun.
Well, it just goes to show you, Joe doesn't play King 9. He's smarter than I am.
coming up on the show today, Stephen Begleiter, the man who came in sixth at the World Series of Poker Final Table, the November 9 member from just a couple of months ago. He's got a charity event that you're going off to New York to play tomorrow, right?
I am, absolutely. I leave tomorrow morning. It starts tomorrow night at about 7 o'clock. It's already sold out.
Nice.
And I guess, according to Steve, and we'll get him in a minute here, I think he said they now have pledged over $300,000 that they've raised for this thing.
Fantastic.
Before it. And we've got an auction going on. It's going to be a rebuy tournament. I mean, there's going to be a ton of other things. There's going to be some bounties put up there. So I don't know what the figure is going to be when we get done. I'll tell you next week when I get back.
Mm-hmm.
But it's $300,000 and counting.
Well, we'll talk to him about that and about playing against Joe Cada Darvin Moon and Phil Ivey. And
what the future is going to bring.
Absolutely.
My gosh, I mean, this had to be life-changing for him.
Yep.
So I think it was $1.6 million he got for a check.
Yeah, I think that's right.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, it's a little bigger than the check I got in Tunica this weekend. I am happy to say.
I was about to say.
I've played two tournaments so far, the first in Biloxi a couple of weeks ago, finished 15th there, played one in Tunica this weekend at the World Series of Poker Circuit event, finished 14th there.
Joe, are you patting yourself on the back? I think your training's working.
No, I wish I could take some credit. I think he's playing well. And, you know, they're pretty good-sized tournaments. You know, it wasn't 60 players, over 300 and some odd players. Isn't that right,
Yeah,
Paul?
About 300 players each time. And, you know, good fields, not as good as the one on Saturday. For, you know, on the weekends, they always get bigger ones. I played the one on Thursday. But the one on Saturday, they sold out 800 people there. They used every single table in Harrah's Tunica.
Wow.
Yeah. So, but I was happy, you know. Here's how I look at it. If you start off at 15th and then you move up to 14th, if you keep doing that, I will be in the November 9 this year.
It's a good incentive to keep playing.
Yeah, Joe's laugh sounded a little evil there, didn't it? Like, yeah, right, was the underlying sentiment behind that laugh. But before I tell you about a couple of hands I played down there, I do want to congratulate another St. Louisan named Sean Brown. Sean won. I played an event two. Sean won the next day's event, which is a 550 buy-in, event number three. He took it down for, I think, something like $32,000 or $35,000. Now, here's the great thing, Dennis.
Okay.
This is the same guy who won the Heartland event just a couple of months ago here in St. Louis.
Ah, oh, sweet.
In that one, I think he took down $130,000. So he's having a pretty good couple of months. And even more amazing, listen to this, Joe. Before November, Sean had never played a live tournament.
Wow.
Goes and wins his first one in the Heartland, goes and plays the second one, wins that one in Tunica. So there's a name that's on the books right now for a pretty good start to 2010. Sean Brown from St. Louis. We'll keep our eye on him. Let me tell you about a couple of hands that I played down there in my event. I went out with a pair of sixes against Ace King, and, you know, he caught an ace, and a friend of mine said to me, oh, man, you took another bad beat. But I don't consider that a bad beat,
no,
do you?
No, that's not really a bad beat. You went into it basically with a coin flip on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens all the time on it. The bad beat is when the guy catches and, you know, the two-outer on the river or
right.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Big, big difference.
All right, so here are a couple of hands that we played. One of them was at the level where it was a $50 ante and blinds of 300 and 600. There's one limper, and then a guy raises to 1,600. And I called with the queen of hearts, eight of hearts on the button, hoping that the blinds and the limper would call. And I had a hand there that I normally would not play, queen of hearts, eight of hearts. But it's one of those hands where if you flop the miracle flop, you're good. And if you don't, you can get away from it really, really easily.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how I look at hands like that. Particularly if I think the blinds and the limper are going to call five ways, you know, I'll play a hand like that. Yes, Joe.
Can I ask Dennis what he thinks I'm thinking right now?
With a queen eight of hearts?
Yeah.
Is that similar to a king nine of spades?
I don't know. I don't like it.
No.
Sorry, Paul. So far, I don't like it.
Okay, that's okay. All right. The problem for me was that the blinds did not call and the limper went away.
He did not
want to play for a raise. So now I'm heads up against. And by the way, at this point, I'm the chip leader at the table, and the guy who had made the raise is the second chip leader at the table. We're supposed to be staying away from each other, but we get into this. The flop comes jack of hearts, nine of hearts, six of clubs. So I have flopped the straight flush, the gut shot, straight flush draw. It's checked to the razor now bets 3,200, which is almost a pot size bet, and I think for a while before I do anything. Now, if you're in my situation there, what do you do?
Well, again, coming in with a queen eight is not exactly a premium hand.
I agree.
You've got to be very careful.
Absolutely.
On this thing.
Yep.
You have something now to work with, possibly.
Yes.
I'm probably still going to try and play small ball on this thing. I'm going to try and keep the pot fairly small and see what happens on it.
Okay.
I don't know. I'm kind of curious as what you did.
Joe, what would you do there?
And
I know
I
you
would,
hate the fact that you're even in this hand. But
I have no idea. I really have no idea if you won the hand or lost the hand, although it shouldn't matter a whole lot. You know, it's kind of when the guy, you're playing a cash game and he taps you on the side and says, oh, geez, I mucked 9-10 in the flop game, 9-9-10. You know, who cares? that's just what you do at that moment. And if you called with all the bad hands that, you should throw away, you'd go broke. I mean, you shouldn't call with all these bad hands in many, many spots.
I agree.
People just, okay.
Before you go on, mistakes are
right there pre-flop with the hand selection and the position and when they play and who they play and what they call, and if maybe even if you were to raise with that hand or something, if you sense weakness from him. And again, a beautiful card might come for you on the turn, but I, so far, and I apologize, I'm taking a little long on this one, so far I'd agree with Dennis. I would keep it small because you kind of have a hand that, you can get into big trouble with. If you read weakness and you really sense he's just doing a continuation bet and doesn't look that strong, you have a little edge on him there, well, then maybe I would pop it and hope to take it down right there and take a chance. But if you're not sure and you really don't have a read, I would just call and try to keep it small as possible.
I have to apologize because I got confused here. The hand against the other big chip stack is the other hand I want to tell you about. In this hand, it's the short stack at the table. This is a guy who doesn't have all that much. He's only got about 20,000 when the hand starts, and I've got about 60,000. So at this point, when he bets 3,200, I don't even think he had 20,000. I think he had maybe like 12 or 13,000 when the hand started. And again, I had like 60. So when he bets 3,200, a near pot size bet, he's only got another 7,500 or 8,000 behind. Does that change what you do at that point?
Well, he's almost committed to the pot right now.
Yep.
Obviously, you re-raise. If he's a decent player, he's willing to risk that much money out there, he's probably going to call you no matter what.
Yeah, so he can call you with pocket whatever there, almost.
Oh, exactly. So he's probably coming into it anyhow. You don't have to force the action. You have the luxury of being able to sit back there and catch another card. You know, why push it right there? He's probably not going to push him away. He doesn't have enough chips left to fold, hardly. And even if a turn comes, he's probably going to be doing the same thing.
Yep.
And it puts the pressure back on him to check or to shove it in.
Yeah, but I'm thinking that if I just call behind him and it does go in on the turn and it's a blank, now I'm not getting nearly as good pot odds as I normally would. If I'm going to decide to put it all in there, why not put it in right then and there?
Well, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. I'm just saying you now have the luxury of making that decision, because he's probably committed no matter how you play it.
But I want to put the pressure back on him. As the big stack at the table, I'm feeling my bully impulses. And
the truth comes out.
Well,
here it is.
No, I mean, this is how a big stack's supposed to act at a table against a short stack.
Yeah, but
make him make the decision, because if he was just making a continuation bet, there's a jack high flop out there. He might have been making this raise with eights, and now he's making a continuation bet on a jack 9-6 board. Who knows?
It's very possible, but what he made pre-flop plus that 3,200, he's got, 40% of his chips in this thing?
Yeah.
What hand would he have to fold there?
I agree.
I think if well, you, the, you, You have to expect him to call you. If you push out there, you have to expect him to call you on it.
I did expect him to call me, and I was willing with 12 out, with 12 outs there, knowing I was a little bit of a dog, to put this guy to the test and see if he was going to do that.
12 times 2 times 2, basically you're almost a coin flip there if you read his hand right.
Exactly. So I put him all in for another 7,500 or 8,000 or whatever it was, and he seriously tanks at this point. And finally, after being in the tank for about 90 seconds, he calls and turns over ace-jack, offsuit, no hearts. So all of my outs are still alive.
Yeah.
I catch a heart on the river, and he's gone.
Okay. Yeah. As long as he didn't catch the set or the something like that or whatever on it, you know, where he had it. But, yeah, I mean, the guy had to call there almost. I can't believe he took 90 seconds. You got 40% of your chips in. You have top pair and top kicker. My chips are in.
Yep.
If I put 40% in there.
And you're short like that, I mean.
Exactly.
Absolutely. I didn't understand why he was thinking that much either.
Yeah.
So.
And if you flopped a set, well, then I'm getting up from the table and leaving.
Yeah. I wasn't proud of playing that hand pre-flop, but after the flop, I felt, you know what, let's you know, the bully thing had been working at that point. As you know, when you get the big stack
oh,
at the
yeah,
table,
I love it.
You
I want love
to try
it.
To push people around.
Okay.
All right, here's the other.
You say something interesting there, Paul. To me, when people get short, in general, their chips become very, very valuable, and they usually don't splash around enough. They can't. When people get more chips in general, they tend to, you know, the chips aren't as valuable, and they might play the queen-eight. If you were mid-stack there, you probably never would have called with that queen-eight.
Absolutely. Absolutely right.
No, Joe, that's a beautiful point, because it plays both ways. You also can put the opponent on a smaller range of hands. Because if he's short stack and has those valuable chips, he's not going to be, you know, raising out there with a 5-4 hearts or a whatever the heck type deal.
Right.
You know, you've got to figure he's got to have probably ace jack is one of the poorer hands he has there that he's getting involved in.
Right. Because he's not going to do that with 8-9 usually, you know, the normal profile.
Although I have seen some players. Never mind. We won't go there.
All right. We're talking poker here at the final table at Harris St. Louis on 5-9 of the Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. And here's the other hand I want to talk to you guys about from my tournament. Now we're a little bit later. We're into the next round, and the blinds are at 400, 800 with a $100 ante. I am in the big blind. There are three limpers. No one has raised it as it comes around to me. I look down at ace six offsuit. Now, I will tell you that the guy who was the third limper into this pot is a guy who, in that situation, I had seen before making this move with a big ace or a small pair. I had seen him do that a couple of times, and he was the other chip leader. I was surprised when he didn't raise there and just limped in, because either he's setting a trap or he really doesn't have much of anything. That's my read on this guy as we go along. So I've got ace six in the big blind. I just tap the felt, and the flop comes out ace six five. So I flopped top two pair. I lead out for 2,400 into a 4,000 chip pot, and the other guys fold, and now the other big stack, the other two players fold, and now the other big stack almost min raises me to just 5,000. Now, based on what my read had been about him before, here's what I was thinking, and then you guys can give me your analysis of what I should have done. I thought to myself, he could have ace-king, he could have ace-queen. Both of those would be hands that you would raise on an ace-six-five flop. He also could have a set of sixes or a set of fives. I put him on just about those four hands as the only hands he has here. I don't see him limping in with ace-five, maybe, probably not. But when he min-raises me, the red flag goes off in my head. And I think to myself, something hinky is going on here. Granted, I flopped top two pair, but I feel like I got to play cautiously against this guy, again, because I'm the big stack, and he's the second big stack. And I'm not ready to go to war with him for all of my chips, or all of his chips, as it turns out. Now, what do you guys think of that thinking before I tell you what happens next in the hand? Or even what I did? Joe, you go first this time.
I go first? Well, yeah. I'd go back to the pre-flop. I probably would have thrown it away, Paul, the A6, because...
Well, no, I'm the big blind, and it's limped around.
Oh, okay. I'm so sorry. Thank you. Okay, well, hey, good. This proves that we don't talk about this stuff before. I just made a mistake. Okay, yeah. So it was limped around. So
I'm in the same whether I want to be or not.
Okay. Okay, that's right. You said that. You tapped the felt. Sorry. Well, you know, I think your first thought is you're just terrified the guy might have pocket fives. But a lot of players play, you know, the monster under the bed. Now, the min raise is scary. You know, could he be doing that with 7-8 with a straight draw and trying to represent, if he's a good player, represent like he has a big hand and he's min-raising and hoping because you let out, you have some type of weak ace that isn't two pair. You know, you have ace-3 or some funny hand on the blind, maybe even just second pair with a funny kicker, and you might lead out taking a stab at the pot, possibly even with the ace out there. So, you know, I think your thinking is probably right on with where you're at right now.
What do you do? What do you do in that situation if you're me?
What do I do? Well, you guys know I really rely a lot on my read of the player. If I could have anything, if I don't have anything, and it's like a limited information question, and it's like an internet thing, you know, I'm probably going to go with the hand. You know, and maybe I'm going to get in trouble here. You know, if he's got pocket fives, that's the only thing I'm really worried about. You know, the min raise, depending upon how deep you guys were again and how many chips you had, you know, it's a tough one. You could pop it right there to kind of see where you're at and see if he comes back over the top of you again, and maybe you make a horrible, tough decision to have to let it go if you think that he actually has pocket fives, I mean, or aces. You think you limped with aces? So, you know, you could just call there and hope he slows down on the turn. If he has 7-8 and he's buying a free card, sometimes people do that with, like, flush draws in the game. They'll make a raise in position, heads up, and now you'll check it to him because you're kind of worried and he'll get a free card. You know, they'll do that with flush draws a lot in certain games. So maybe he's doing that with a straight draw and he's going to get two cards for cheap for the min raise, which is unlikely but could be depending upon what type of player he is. So, you know, you're in a tough spot here, but, you know, tournament-wise, it's hard to wait around for sets and the nuts. So sometimes you got to play a little bit, and this is a pretty big hand you have here. I'm not loving it. You know, I'm like you. I'm a little worried, but, you know, I'd probably play middle of the road, maybe go ahead and re-raise a little there and see what he does. Or just call and hope he might slow down or get another look at him on the turn, see what he does on the turn. You know, if he checks it, now you start feeling like you got, you know, you definitely have it, obviously. So, Dennis, what do you think?
No, I agree somewhat with you. I like if you got a bandage, I don't want to ease it off slowly. I'm going to rip this sucker off. You have more variety hands. You are the big blind. You could have a 5-6. You could have the ace-5. You could have the ace-6. You could have a 3-4. You could have a 7-8. Heck, at this stage, you could have a 4-7, and you flopped an open end. Mm-hmm. He has no clue what you have
right
at this time.
Right.
If he had even, honestly, if he had the middle pair of 8s or 9s, he might make that mid-race to try and, you know, push you off of it if you happen to have a 6-7 and you caught middle pair type deal. I don't know for sure on that. I want to find out where I'm at. I'm probably going to repop it right back to him,
mm-hmm,
and find out if he does have a serious hand or not. Now, if he shoves, and again, you were right on mark there, Joe, it's probably a hand because you don't want to give up that many chips to that because he has such a big stack along with you. I'd hate to say it, but I might lay down an A6 there if he turns around and comes right back at you strong,
mm-hmm,
rather than get all your chips in with. I mean, he could have a 5-6. There's all sorts of possibilities there. I don't want to risk mine against the other guy, but I want to find out where I am.
Yeah.
Right now, he makes a mid-raise. That might be a feeler one. He might do, like Joe was saying, to do it to where you can't do a continuation, and you're going to check on that so he gets to see free cards. I mean, there's lots of possibilities. You come back over the top, though. You're telling him right now, I've got the hand, guy.
Yeah.
If you want to play this thing, get damn serious, because I've got the hand, and I might have the set of sixes.
Mm-hmm.
So I probably would have repopped it and see what his reaction is.
Well, the other thing that went through my mind was if he had fives or sixes, if he had flopped a set, it's a rainbow board.
Yeah.
What is he worried about? He's worried about me possibly having the straight, I guess. But would I bet out with that? Maybe, but probably not. I would probably check call.
There's not a straight out there, though, is there? Isn't it an eight?
No, there's a 5-6. So, I could have, as Dennis said, 8-7. I could have 4-3. I could have 7-4 for an open ender.
Straight draw. Okay. All right.
A straight draw. Right. I think most players would be more likely to check call in that situation rather than lead out into a board like that. I'm not saying everybody would.
Yeah.
So the more I thought about it, I thought, I don't think he has a set here because I don't think he'd raise with a set. He didn't really seem to be that kind of player as I'd played with him for a few hours. So now I determine he's probably on a big ace. I'm not eliminating completely the possibility of a set, but I'm leaning more towards ace-king or ace-queen, which seems to be the logical move for him at that point. Well, if that's the case, I'm going to try to take a card off here. And if a king or a queen doesn't come, I'm going to get aggressive.
Okay.
That was my thinking. So I just called.
All right.
Boom, there's a queen. So now all my plots are foiled. All of my brilliant thinking about this hand has gone completely down the toilet because now of the four hands I thought he might have started with, he could have three of them and crush me.
That's a funny limping hand, though. Ace-queen would be a funny hand to limp with in a tournament.
You know, he's the kind of guy who had been doing that,
kind of
though.
A vulnerable hand, you know.
Yep,
obviously, it's just a hair above the ace-jack. I mean, it's silly to say that, but it's not like a great premium limping hand to trap a bunch of people with. You know, people would raise an ace-queen.
But, Joe, that was the way this guy was playing. In situations like that, he usually limped with a big ace or a small pair. So I check the turn when the queen comes out. I check. He bets. He leans forward a little bit and seems really happy.
Mm-hmm.
And I mucked my two pair face up. And one of the other players at the table said, did you just fold two pair? I said, yeah, I think he's got a bigger two pair. And he shows me ace-king. So I was, you know, at least I was right of my read that he had one of those four hands there. And I lost, I think, pretty much the minimum in that hand, considering I'd flopped two pair. But in retrospect, I wish I'd come back over the top on the flop.
Yeah, I like doing that. The only thing I worry about and the reason why I come back over the top, I have times where, like if I'd had the aces and for whatever reason had not raised pre-flop in a position, and I flop the top set there, somebody makes a raise. If I make a mid-raise back, odds are you're going to at least call it. And I'm trying to build a pot. I'm trying to get maximum value on this thing.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, then if you catch your two pair on the turn and you had the ace-queen on the deal, you're going to feel fairly confident, and there's already enough money out there when you make a 60, 70% bet. That's a substantial bet.
Right.
So if I flop a top set, I'm trying to build a pot up there. Mid-raises, I do that occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good way to – it's a dangerous way if you catch a straight or something, but, you know, that's the way you build a big pot. You don't build a big pot by just checking and slow playing your aces all the way to the river.
I wonder, and I've thought about this hand a lot, obviously, I wonder if I had three-bet him on the flop and he called – and that queen came off, what could I be thinking then? I'm going to be worried about this hand.
You are, but do the flip-flop to him. You raised him on it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you had ace-queen and suddenly the queen comes, then you're going to try and trap him and check. He's got to be thinking. I guarantee if you three-X him on the flop and then he just calls it and the queen comes out there and he has that ace-king, of course, you check, he's scared to death now. Not you. He's the one now that's worried about it.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And,
all
you
right,
know, you still might have to go with it, like I said.
Well, true.
Not often you're sitting there and you have kings and you flop top set of kings, you know. You've got to play some poker. So I think that ace, you know, the top two in that spot is so likely the best hand. And, you know, like I said, the monster under the bed, you know, can this guy have pocket fives for a set of fives? I mean, he can, but it's really... At the end of the day, you add up the number of times in that spot that he does have that, it's pretty rare.
Well,
so, you know, there's got to be a time or two out of 100 he has it. The rest, you're ahead of tons of hands that, that he has.
Absolutely right. Here's the good news about the whole thing. Both of us made the final 27, but I lasted longer than he did. I might have lasted a little bit longer with a few more of his chips. I'll grant you that. All right, so there's some analysis from my weekend in Tunica. And when we come back, we'll be joined by Stephen Begleiter, a guy who went a lot further. He made the November 9 last year, finished 6th at the World Series of Poker 2009 main event. We'll have that plus a sad story about a poker pro who's made over $9 million in his career, and his bracelet was auctioned off on eBay this weekend. All that and lots more as the final table continues. We are live from Harrah's World Series of Poker St. Louis Poker Room. We're at table two on 5 Night of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Before they sit down to play today, they're talking poker with you right now. Live from Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harrah's at the final table on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Our guest segment today is brought to you by PokerStars.net.
PokerStars.net, that is the site that I play on and where you can find me, but I got something much more important to talk about today. PokerStars has been promoting a relief fund to Haiti, and they've been doing a tremendous deal here. They just sent their first $1 million check off to the International Federation of Red Cross down to Haiti for the Haiti relief. They are matching dollar for dollar every donation, every bit that they can raise from the players. They will match it. I don't know how large this is going to grow. We're going to continue on with it till noon on January 31st. But like I said, they've already sent a $1 million check down there. Now we're working on our second million. It's very easy to do. Go into PokerStars, go to the lobby, and you can do it one of two different ways. You can either use your FPP points and convert them over into cash and donate that, or you can go to one of the what they call the dummy tournaments. These are not actual tournaments. There is no play involved or anything. You just sign up for it and you're buy-in. It's a $1 buy-in, a $2 buy-in. There's a series of different tournaments, all the way up to a $1,000 buy-in.
Mm-hmm.
And there are 20,000 people that have already bought into like the $1 one.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes on and on down there. So any amount you want, every bit of it is appreciated. Every time you give a dollar, they match it on that. We've already sent the one check down there, the seven-figure check. I want to send a couple more.
That would be very nice.
It would be. But this is just another thing that PokerStars is doing, and they don't get it. They aren't out there, you know, throwing it out to everybody. They're saying, this is what we can do in our small way, and I want to give them the accolades that they deserve for doing this. So this was a bit of a serious one, guys. Sorry, but PokerStars is doing this. This is a very serious problem down there with the earthquake in Haiti, and every little bit helps.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Find more information by going to PokerStars.net. Now here at the final table, here's a guy who has a little bit of final table experience because a couple of months ago he was at the biggest final table in the world. That would be the final table of the main event of the World Series of Poker. He was our guest last summer after he qualified for the November 9, and now we're happy to have Stephen Begleiter back here at the final table. Hi, Stephen. How are you?
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me.
Oh, anytime, Steve. You know that. Steve and I developed a friendship after the he made the final table, got to know him a little bit of his background, found out that he can be somewhat of a pretty darn good ambassador, too, for poker. Tell us what you're doing up there on January 27th, tomorrow.
Sure, Dennis. January 27th, I'm hosting a fundraiser for a charity called the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund. And the event's going to be held actually on the aircraft carrier, the USS Intrepid, which is now a museum in the harbor in New York City. The genesis of this is I won my entry fee in a game with 20 guys. And they all got a piece of my winnings, and we wanted to come up with a way to give something back. And so we decided to offer sort of our circle of people to this charity. We have a common friend who's on the board there. The Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund is just a wonderful cause. It started off making cash grants to the families of soldiers killed in action in Iraq and Afghanistan. The government approved the benefits there, so they moved on to building. They built one facility in Texas near Fort Hood, which is a state-of-the-art rehab center for soldiers who suffered basically amputation and other terrible injuries. There's facilities for the soldiers to rehab, for their families to stay with them. And they're now in the midst of completing their fundraising for a facility they're building in Maryland that will be treating wounded soldiers with traumatic brain injuries, which is obviously another grievous wound. And these facilities, they're really spectacular. The people who go to the charity event will learn a lot about them. And we've been able to get quite a bit of momentum behind this event. Dennis has kindly accepted an invitation to come and play in our charity poker tournament there. And I'm really excited about it. It's really the first time I've been the driving force behind a fundraiser, and it's all because of my notoriety in the main event. And me and all my buddies were getting a big turnout, a lot of Wall Street people. We hope to raise a lot of money.
Well, yeah, I've been privileged enough to be able to go out to Walter Reed and visit some of the troops there. When you told me about this, I said I'd shuffle my schedule around, whatever it took, to try and make it to it, and I'm just happy I was able to. I'm going to be flying up there tomorrow. First time I'm going to be on the Intrepid. It's just going to be pretty awesome. And I guess you've already sold the event out, basically?
Yeah, you know, first of all, this is the first time the Intrepid's allowed an event like this on the ship itself. And we have some space limitations. We had 250 seats for poker, and they're basically all gone. We shut it down a little while ago. We have another 100 people or so coming to spectate. So it should be a fun evening for those of you who like, you know, turbos. It should be a good turbo structure once we end the rebuy period. And first prize is, again, a seat in the main event. But, yeah, it's sold out.
Fantastic.
So I'm very pleased about that.
Does that seat come with coaching from a guy with experience at the final table?
I'm interested to see it. I am offering a two-hour personal coaching lesson for, you know, in the silent auction. Since I've never done it, I'm not saying there's a lot of value to that. And I don't expect to see Dennis Phillips' name on that pad.
You know what? Let me ask you, Stephen, you know, since you're going to do that, what is maybe one or two pieces of advice you would give people, not necessarily in how to play cards, but about the experience of making that final table? Dennis did it 2 Novembers ago. You did it this past November. What advice would you have for somebody who might make it this November?
Oh, God. You know, first of all, the best advice is to not get unlucky. I mean, take what happened to Dennis this year, right? I mean, he ran ace-king into ace-king and lost when four diamonds or whatever came. So you need to avoid that for 8 days, okay? If you can avoid getting unlucky for 8 days, there's a lot of advice. You know, one, you can't be afraid to lose.
Actually, that's very good advice. You're right.
Yeah, you really can't be afraid to lose. And I would say that was I only played in the main event twice, and that was the big difference between my first year and the second year. First year, I made it to day three, but I never really had any chips. Second year, I got some chips on day two, and I never really lost them. And just, I'd say largely because I wasn't afraid to lose. I wasn't reckless, but, you know, and the one or two times I made really bad decisions, I got the card I needed to bail me out, which if you probably put truth serum into every final table player, they had some incident like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are a lot, but once or twice.
No, you're absolutely right. No, those are words of wisdom, and just little things like that that people have to realize. Don't be afraid to put your chips in there. You got to play your own game. You know, again, don't be super aggressive. Try to analyze the table. I mean, there's lots of little things on it, but they mean a whole lot.
One of the best pieces of advice about tournaments I've ever gotten from you is in a multi-day event, you don't win it on day one.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, guys, I folded kings on day one of the main event this year. And if people watch me on TV and day eight, I look like a maniac throwing chips all over the place. But the game's very situational. Day one, I'm in the small blind. There's a limper. I raise with pocket kings, third level, first time I got a big pair all day. And the big blind re-raises me. And I've been talking to him all day. He's the tightest player I've ever played with. And I'm like, oh, my God, I get kings and this guy gets aces. I don't believe it. So it's folded back to me. I put in another bet, and he goes all in. Well, there's like 100% chance he has aces. And if he doesn't, I don't care. I put in 20% of my chips, which is a lot, but doesn't devastate me. And I think he's got aces. And so I fold two kings face up. And half the table is about 21 years old, and they all faint. And this guy turns over two aces. And I would have been down to 4,000 chips if I play that pot.
Yeah,
and, you know, that's really true. Day one, you can only go broke. You can't win it.
Yeah, I laid down a set of fives on day one on the flop. And as it
really?
Turned out, not like you, I would have won the dang hand, but I had two guys all in before it got back to me. There was
what could they have? Was there a straight jaw or
there was both.
Good, a flush jaw?
Yeah, there was a 5-6-8 out there with two clubs. You know, it's just like, sorry, if I got the best hand, fine. But am I a monster favorite to win this with two other guys in there? No, I'm probably 50% chance to win the thing.
Yeah.
So a straight draw, flush draw, all sorts of outs, two cards to come. I mucked them.
Stephen, speaking of coaching, we heard that you got some advice from Jonathan Little, who's a pretty good tournament player himself, and Elon Schwartz, who was at the final table 2 Novembers ago with Dennis. Did you guys sit down and play little sit-and-goes or situational tournaments of your own to get advice from them, or did you do that with any of your friends? What did you do?
Yeah, first of all, just let me just say this. The day after we made the final table, we had a meeting. Dennis made a comment which really resonated with me, which is get a coach, whatever. Tiger Woods has a swing coach. Michael Jordan had a coach. and if I had any issues about getting a coach, those words were in my head, and I went out and got coaches. Okay,
yep.
So I had two. My main issue was I hadn't really played that much, and I really hadn't played very many single table tournaments. So I got a bunch of recommendations, but in Jonathan Little, I found a guy who was obviously a very accomplished tournament player, very accomplished single table tournament player, and just for a young man, an excellent teacher who really dedicated himself to me. And Alon Schwartz, I'd always just been impressed with. I met like 8 or 9 guys, and I really couldn't decide between the two of them. And so I worked with them both. And yes, we played a bunch of what I would call, what do we call them? Simulation games. So I'd get 9 guys, and everybody would get a chip. I'd obviously play myself, but people would play Darvin Moon and Jeff Shulman and whatever. And we wouldn't play 2-hour levels, but we'd play 30 or 40 minute levels with the starting chip stacks. And, you know, it gave me a really good feel of what the bet sizes felt like. And, you know, they were extremely helpful. In the first simulation game we played, we went from 9 to 7, like, right away and stayed there for a long time. Well, at the final table, we went from 9 to 7 pretty slow, but we stayed at 7 for, like, 8 hours, okay?
Yep.
And so I found the simulation games were extremely helpful in preparing me. And, yeah, Schwartz and Little, one time I had both of them at a game, but usually I had one or the other. And, frankly, usually I put them in Eric Buckman's seat because having a big stack on your left, that would be a big challenge. And that really helped me.
That actually brings up another question, because you had a gentleman sitting to your right over there by the name of Phil Ivey. You had an advantage seat-wise, but how intimidated would you be by a Phil Ivey sitting next to you? I mean, everybody on the table had to have some level of intimidation. I don't give a dang what they say. Phil sitting down there, he has a reputation. He is a tremendous player.
Even without the chips.
Even without the chips. I know he was shorter. You had the advantage of sitting to his left on that.
Yeah.
Did that come into
play? I would say that. I'll be candid. Day 6, he moved to my table. First time I ever played with him in my life. Uh-huh. And I was intimidated. I mean, I mean, and he had some hand where he slow played aces on me and won 10% of my chips. And I was intimidated.
I would say
at the final table, while I was highly respectful, I wasn't intimidated simply because you got to worry about everybody. And
he
was actually, I thought, I mean, I didn't really know how he would play. He was playing fairly conservatively. You know what I mean?
He did.
So I only got into 3 pots with him that I recall, and I won 2 of them and lost 1. Of course, they showed the one I lost on TV. But
7 against ace-9.
Yeah. And, you know, it's like, I obviously didn't know what he had in that hand, right? I had 2 sevens, and the flop comes jack, queen, king with 2 diamonds, and the turn's a jack. So you're not really looking to win a big pot with your pocket sevens in that hand, right?
This is a good point.
And I didn't know what he had. But, like, you know, I remember thinking I can beat ace-4 diamonds, and I was getting 3-1 to call. But there were so many hands I couldn't beat, and it was a relatively small pot, and I didn't want to give Phil Ivey chips. I guess that's one thing that I'm sure myself and a lot of other players were thinking was, like, let's not give Phil Ivey any more chips than we have to. Certainly on day 8 at the on the rundown to the final table, he was very short and I had a lot of chips, and I wasn't giving Phil Ivey anything. I mean, if he was in the pot, I didn't want to give him any chips. So, yeah, very respectful, but didn't really want to lose chips to him. But by then the intimidation had worn off a little bit.
Okay, well, that's a good advantage to have.
Buckman got to me because, like, he re-raised me 15 times, you know. So position is huge. If Phil Ivey was on my left, might have been just as difficult.
Yep.
Do you think that that final table, particularly the way it came down between Joe Cada and Darvin Moon, that there was more luck involved than skill in that heads-up battle?
Well, I would say that, you know, a lot of people have said that. So let's just be clear, right? To get to the final table, everybody had to play really well, make a lot of good decisions, very few bad ones, and, you know, get a card here or there. So, you know, I played with Joe on day 8. Joe played very well. Everybody deserved to be at the table. Probably several hundred people also deserved to be at the table, including Dennis, who didn't make it. So we're all fortunate to be there. And, you know, yeah, I guess it helps to get cards at the right time in these things. I mean, I think that a lot of people there could legitimately say it could have been them but for. But I think that's the game. I think that Joe Cada is a really deserving champion. He's a very perceptive player. I enjoyed playing with him. And I don't begrudge him the championship. You know, it's nice to win when you're 80-20 underdog a couple times in a row. But That's part of the game. I give him credit for holding himself together after he lost that big pot to Jeff Shulman. He got down to 2.5 million chips, and he was fortunate to double up on the very next hand. But you know, he wasn't afraid to lose. He got it all in with, I think he had fours against Ivy's ace eight and won that. I mean, he wasn't afraid to play. So, no, the luck's part of the game. I mean, I lost on an unlucky situation when Darvin Moon rivered me. But if I had not lost a big pot to Antoine Saoud, you know, I would have had enough chips to survive that. So,
yep.
Yeah, it's poker, as you said. It is. One last question real quick. What does the future with poker and Steve Begleiter bring? Where are you going?
Oh, it's a great question. I'm itching to get back out there. It killed me that I wasn't a PCA. I'm hoping to go to the L.A. Poker Classic at the Commerce.
Okay.
I'm almost definitely going to that. That fits my schedule real well. And with a little luck, I might be at the NAPT the week before at the Venetian.
Excellent. I guess
you're going to see Steve Begleiter at the main event, and you're going to see him whenever his work and family schedule permits, because it's just a ton of fun.
That's great. Well, we will both be at the NAPT next month out at the Venetian, so we look forward to seeing you there and maybe having you back on the show.
Anytime, guys. Seriously, just all you got to do is ask.
Well, I'll tell you what. I'd love to have Ace King versus Ace King against you at a final table somewhere. How's that sound?
Yeah. That would be fun. Sweating already just thinking about it. That'd be a lot of fun. I like to get deep. You know, I've been playing a lot. I never really played online before this. I never played online really before I made the final table. But of course, played online to practice, and now I play in these Sunday tournaments. And it's like it's hard to get deep. You know, it's like you get it in with your hair, and some guy rivers something, and you're crushed. I mean, like all the things that didn't happen to me in July, they've been happening to me online these last few weeks. So I have a renewed respect for how hard it is to get deep regularly like Dennis does.
Well, thanks for joining us here today, Stephen. We really appreciate it. We'll see you soon.
I'll see you tomorrow.
Thanks, gentlemen. Bye-bye.
Stephen Begleiter joining us here at the final table, live from Harrah's St. Louis. By the way, we should mention, we keep talking about November 9. Dennis got there from this room that we're sitting in right now.
Very good point.
Winning a $200 tournament here. They are still running qualifiers and will continue to. Many weekends, you can come down here to St. Louis, put your $200 on the line. It's a double-level freeze-out. You win your first table, you go to the final table, you win that. And you're headed to Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Don't forget about the circuit event that's also coming here the first 2 weeks of April. It's going to be huge. There are two full weeks of events with three tournaments every single day, from the 200 level to 300 to 500 to 1,000 to 1,500 to the main event, which is a $5,000 buy-in. For details, go to the website harrahsstlouis.com. This portion of our show, The Final Table, is brought to you by Reactor Sports Watches.
Reactor watch, it's the watch that I wear. I carry this thing around with pride, guys. And every time I go somewhere, somebody asks to check it. It is that good-looking. It's that attractive. And the thing that's nice about it, it's that durable. And I wouldn't say it if I couldn't back it up. This watch will be your lifetime watch. If you want to take this watch and compare it to any other watch on the market, regardless of price, go ahead and do it. These watches are built to meet and, in many cases, to exceed the Swiss standards that are out there. This watch, though, I tell you, it's priced in all different ranges. You go to a Helium, you go to the Trident, you go to the different models on that. Find one that you like. Pick it up. It'll be your watch for lifetime. And we'll just sit down at a table sometime and compare watches.
There you go. For more information on Reactive Watch, click the sponsors link on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com, which is also where you can download podcasts of this show, The Final Table, and you can also subscribe via iTunes. When we come back, we'll hear about a former champion whose bracelet was on eBay this weekend. You won't believe how much it sold for and what his situation is. As we continue with the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com.
From the poker room of Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table with the St. Louis poker pro who beat over 13,000 other players in 2 years at the World Series of Poker main event. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harrah's on 590 The Fan KFNS.
This portion of our show is brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, who work to fight for poker in every venue all across the country, from courthouses to Capitals, to home games, wherever they are. The Poker Players Alliance is fighting for you. Online, offline, all kinds of poker. They need your support. They're fighting for poker in Delaware now, where there's a bill in the legislature that would open up the doors to table games in that state. And I'll tell you right now, if Delaware and Pennsylvania both have legalized poker, that's not good for Atlantic City, which is right next to both Pennsylvania and Delaware, and it won't be good for them. But more poker everywhere is good for poker players everywhere, and that's what the Poker Players Alliance is all about. Go to the website, thePPA.org, and find out more and join. It's a nonprofit membership organization that exists for players like you and because of players like you. The website, again, is thePPA.org. I'm Paul Harris with Dennis Phillips and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. And here's a sad story to wrap up our show today. T.J. Cloutier was one of the most famous poker players in the world for a long time.
Absolutely.
In 2005, he won a bracelet at the World Series of Poker in a $5,000 buy-in, no limit hold'em event. That bracelet was sold on eBay this weekend by the pawn shop that was holding it for him.
Jeez.
The Plano pawn shop put up the bracelet. We don't know who won it because of eBay's privacy policies. But before I tell you how much it sold for, what do you think a bracelet goes for?
See, I have no idea. I know they've been sold before. I've actually got approached by a guy out there at the WSOP saying, I've got two bracelets here. They were, you know, from 10 years ago by people who maybe don't know, but they're actual bracelets. I don't know what they go for.
$4,006.
Oh, my God.
Does that seem low to you? Joe, does that seem low to you?
Well, Dennis, wasn't I with you? Didn't we play a 1K? You know, you guys know I play a lot of the 1K sit-and-go single tables. And that guy had them on the table?
Yeah, that's like the guy I was talking about. Yeah, he was trying to sell them to other people. I can't remember what he was asking for them because I wasn't that interested in them, frankly. But $4,000 sounds vastly undervalued to me.
Yeah, me too. Me too.
Honestly, if I'd have known it was selling, I probably would have bought it.
$2,000.
Really?
Yeah.
But it also wasn't.
Well, what's really sad about this is that T.J. Cloutier, 71 years old, six World Series of Poker bracelets, one of the most successful tournament players in the history of the game, 39 titles around the world, career earnings of $9.4 million, but he's got that craps leak.
Yeah, he does.
And he puts too much money on the table and loses and loses and loses. And got to the point where he had to pawn his World Series of Poker, one of his World Series of Poker bracelets, which now is sold for $4,000. I find the story tremendously sad. You see TJ wheeling around in his scooter at the World Series of Poker, and you think to yourself, there's one of the greats who just couldn't hold on to the money.
Well, it's maybe a lesson to be learned by all.
Absolutely, particularly young players who want to do that for a living. I'm sorry to end on a sad note today, but I wanted to bring that up before we went. We'll be back next week with another show live from Table 2 in the World Series of Poker Room here at Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel. For information on that circuit event or just coming and playing here and going for another bad beat, go to the website harrahsstlouis.com. For the poker coach, Joe McGowan, and the Team Poker Stars pro, Dennis Phillips, I'm Paul Harris. This is 590 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.